Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
Research is showing us more and more that breastfeeding provides many health benefits for both mom and baby, but it can be difficult to manage in today's hurried world. Learning all you can before you give birth can help. My guests today in this panel-style discussion are Dr. Maya Bunick. She's a professor of pediatrics at the University of Colorado School of Medicine, and Dr. Jenny Thomas. She's a pediatrician and breastfeeding medicine specialist at Aurora Healthcare in Franklin, Wisconsin. Ladies, doctors, welcome to the show. So let's start with the health benefits of breastfeeding for both mom and baby. So Dr. Bunick, why don't you start and give us some of those benefits that they both can get and the things that they can bond with when learning to breastfeed?
I think one of the main benefits of breastfeeding are that breast milk has alive cells that help with immunity, and that really helps decrease the incidence of respiratory infections or the relative risk of ear infections, any kind of colds, diarrheal illnesses, that's the main thing. In addition, there's longer-term benefits in terms of prevention of certain intestinal diseases and asthma, obesity, some childhood cancers as well. For the mom, the advantages are a faster return to her pre-pregnancy birth weight. There's many preventative things that are helpful later in life in terms of prevention of hypertension and stroke and heart attack, which is one of the leading killers of women, and also ovarian and breast cancer. So there's lots of great reasons to breastfeed. And I always try to emphasize to people, too, that it's really this really lovely way to be with your baby. It's about feeding, but eventually it becomes part of the start of a great relationship between you and your baby.
Dr. Thomas, what is colostrum? As we start breastfeeding in those early days, tell us a little bit about what's going on physiologically with breast milk and what we're giving our babies.
We typically talk about colostrum as being the first milk that mom makes after delivering a baby. And that sort of focuses colostrum as a point in time. But it's really a very specific recipe that's changing over the first 4 days. And it's filled with immunoglobulins. As Dr. Bunick says, there's a lot of nutrition to breast milk, but it really is mostly about helping the baby survive without getting sick. And so the ingredients in colostrum, a lot of them are there to prepare the baby's immune system and help them start fighting diseases right from the beginning. We call it liquid gold because it's so important for the baby to get. There are so many different ingredients that the baby is waiting to get so that certain processes in the immune system can start to develop. But it tends to be a very high-protein type of milk that is available to the baby early on in lactation. And it's a fluctuating fluid because it's everything about breast milk is dynamic and changing for the needs of the baby, but very important for the baby to get.
Dr. Bunick, how does breastfeeding compare to formula feeding? As people, you know, back, it's kind of been a wave. It's gone up and down. So back in the 50s, 60s, people weren't really breastfeeding. Then they did, then they didn't, and now it's a real push for it. Explain a little bit why this happens and compare the two.
I think in the 50s and 60s, we really were telling moms they could breastfeed, but the formula was sort of more convenient and didn't really require a lot of work and all that. And I think that over time, we have really learned as women in the United States breastfeed more that those babies, because they get the live cells and the immune properties, that is so much better, both for mom and baby. The real difference is, despite the fact that formulas really are trying to put in probiotics and other things, is that in terms of some of the other ingredients like protein and calcium and phosphorus, they're pretty close. formula has a little bit more protein in it, but very sort of not really, not very significant. But the main thing is that there's no way to secrete the live cells and the immune properties that they're getting from mom. And as soon as the breast milk is transferred, they get those properties. And then, again, it can help, as I mentioned earlier, with longer-term prevention. When we first sort of changed the policies, we based it on 6 weeks of breastfeeding. But now we know in countries where they help mothers have maternity leave for longer, that sort of more breast milk is better, so more exclusivity in the early 6 months, and more and long for longer, for a longer period of time, is also adds to the sort of decreased risks of some of the things we talked about earlier.
I'd just like to add, when you take a look at some of the formula advertising, they will talk about the comparison of the nutritional components of breast milk to their formula product. And it's important to realize that breast milk is dynamic. It's constantly changing. And so it's very difficult to take a sample of breast milk and find out exactly what the protein content is or the calcium or phosphorus content is. But that we really lose a lot in the translation when we just compare nutritional components of breast milk to the nutritional components of formula, because so much of what the breast milk is infection fighting. It's anti-inflammatory. It is specifically made for the needs of that baby. We know actually that there's genetic information that's being passed from mom to baby, and none of that is ever going to be reproduced enough to be put into an infant formula. So the push to get women to breastfeed is important because of all the ingredients that we are never going to be able to synthesize and put into an infant formula.
Dr. Thomas, sticking with you for a minute, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions that women have pre-birth and then afterwards. So answer a few of those for us, if you would. When is the milk supposed to come in? And what if women have latching difficulties? What do you tell them about surviving those first couple of weeks, which could be the most difficult of all?
Oh, I think they are the most difficult of all. They're tough to get through. And it just highlights the need for how much support we really need to have. The milk coming in is one of, I have about a million pet peeves. That's probably one of them, because colostrum is milk. It's just a different recipe. And because the fluid is constantly changing in composition, your milk is in. It's pretty unusual for a woman to have absolutely no milk at the time that she delivers. So, that milk coming in, it probably means when does it increase in volume? And that typically happens around day 4 or day 5. Latching issues are the most common problems that people have. And most hospitals will have someone available to help you with any of the questions that you have with latching. And sometimes, I'm in the Midwest, we are very bad at asking for help. We're terrible. I hate to bother you, but could you please help me with this? But when I'm teaching, I make the moms in my class raise their hands and promise me that they will ask for help. There is myth that says that breastfeeding might hurt for the first couple of days and you just have to tough it out. And that's baloney. If the body is signaling that there is pain, that means that there's something wrong. And before we dismiss it, somebody trained in breastfeeding really does need to take a look and see how things are going. So there are an army of people that are willing to help new mothers learn how to breastfeed, but sometimes we have a big disconnect between those people and getting them to the moms that need the services. And so one of the things that I tell expecting moms is that if you need help, you really do need to ask. So that would be my biggest advice. It is not easy. And if somebody offers you help, you should take it and then filter what works for you and then skip whatever is not working for you.
I would like to add that when I see moms for a breastfeeding consultation, I sort of almost have a monologue about all of that because I think people really aren't prepared for the first few weeks of the baby's life, and that's when the milk's getting established. So I always try to tell people they should try to live like they're on vacation. That means they shouldn't clean their house, they shouldn't do laundry. To Jenny's point, ask for help for those things if people want to help you. It may be a time to eat off of paper plates for a short period of time. Get creative about meals. Maybe that rotisserie chicken that you normally wouldn't buy at the grocery store, you might buy that. Sort of ready-made foods. I tell them to try to minimize entertaining because they probably could use that time to rest. So if they're having someone come every day and hold their baby and that takes away from their resting time, that their baby will still look new in a month, and that's a better time to receive visitors once her own body's healed and all that. And waiting to do thank you notes and phone calls and all of that, and really trying to get as much rest as possible. Some women nap well next to their baby, but others hear every little squawk and snort. And so I really like the recommendation of that someone takes the baby out of the building, so they go for a walk outside, or on Sunday morning take the baby out in a car seat with a little gauze blanket over it for coffee while the mom gets to sleep in her quiet house. So I really think that people, it's such a big thing in the first month of life, and I think unfortunately we spend a lot of time teaching moms about breathing and about labor, and it's probably better to talk about how they can survive that first month.
Yeah, we don't do a very good job of self-care either. We need to, when mom is pregnant, we have baby showers and we give up our seat and we say, oh, isn't this wonderful? And then she delivers and then she's invisible. And one of the things I think we need to do a better job is to if somebody offers to do something, to be specific, have a list of things that you could say, yeah, that would be great if you could go get me X, Y, and Z. I know that when I had my last son, we put a message on our answering machine that the baby was born, he weighed blah, blah, and was 20 inches long, and Jenny and the baby are fine, and our visiting hours are from 2 until 4, and if you aren't bringing food, there's going to be a list of things to do on the refrigerator. So it was a way of decreasing guests, which to Dr. Bunick's point is really important. This is not a good time to be entertaining.
This time of year, it's hard to avoid getting sick, whether it's a common cold or the stomach bug. It's crucial to stay well hydrated. Hydralyte is a great-tasting clinical hydration product that contains the correct balance of sodium, glucose, and water to rapidly replace fluids and electrolytes. Hydralyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade, and is available as a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or effervescent tablets that you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydralyte in the digestive aisle at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. Visit Hydralyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. That's Hydralyte.com/podcasts to save 30% on Amazon with promo code HydraKid. As you say, it's so important that women practice self-care while they're learning to care for this new little life. And it's so important, and it is hard. And so we don't always care for ourselves. But now back to the baby for a minute. How do we know that the baby's getting enough milk? Dr. Bunick, speak about some of the breastfeeding tips. How do we know that they're getting enough milk? Is there a way? And what if they are having difficulties? Who is it that they talk to about that, their gynecologist or their pediatrician?
So I think there are a couple sort of key things early on in feedings. Babies like to sometimes sleep at the breast, so I always recommend that they make sure that the baby's sort of actively suckling, and that needs to be pretty constant over sort of 8 to 10 minutes. I always tell them it's like microwave popcorn. If there's pauses, then sometimes it's not sort of a good batch, and it's the same with the feeding. If the baby ends up sort of being in a flutter feed or in sort of a half sleepy state for half the feeding, then sometimes those feedings become really prolonged and mom can get sore nipples, but also the baby might not get enough milk and then wake up an hour later hungry. So really trying to keep the baby on task. I think in the early days, it's a really good idea to feed the baby with just a diaper on so that you can stroke their skin and sort of rub on their hand to sort of keep them awake and on task. So that's one during a feeding. Some moms hear swallows, but not everybody. And some moms feel letdowns, and that doesn't always happen either. So I think those aren't less reliable. I think, unfortunately, we wish the babies came with a cartoon bubble that said, I'm done, or I'm full, or a gas gauge, but that's not the case. So I think stools are a really good way of trying to tell that. So usually in the first 3 or 4 days of life, by day four, they should probably be having sort of a yellowish, seedy looking stool. It can still look kind of watery, but more yellow on day 4 or 5. And so, and as time goes on in that first month of life, really looking at the number of stools, usually breastfed babies in the first month stool a few times a day for sure. So that's another way. I think if the mom's still concerned, most moms are challenged by the fact that there's this white watery substance that's coming out of their breasts, and that's never been part of their experience. And so everybody, I think, is concerned about milk supply. So seeing someone who's a lactation specialist, whether that's a pediatrician or an OBGYN or their family medicine doc, and particularly those that can do sort of a pre and post weight, sometimes that's empowering too, to see that the baby is transferred milk. But if they don't have that, just looking at weight gain is another way. So looking at the growth chart and measuring weight gain. And I would emphasize it would probably need to be on the same scale, because if you go to different offices, sometimes scales are different weights. But when I had my children, for the first month, I definitely wanted to go every week to the pediatrician to get weighed, because it just made me feel better.
And I think, if I could just add, it's not a good habit to get into, to be checking weight as an indicator of milk intake, at least in the first several days of life. So a baby who is delivering is born in a hospital setting, the mother often gets a lot of IV fluid during the course of the delivery, and the baby, as long as they're still attached to the placenta, is getting a certain percentage of those IV fluids and can be born a little waterlogged or a lot waterlogged, sometimes 7 to 10%, depending. Babies after C-sections, it can be 10% or more waterlogged. And then we start focusing on the weight loss that happens in those first couple of days, and it's actually just the baby peeing off those extra fluids from delivery. But because the baby's losing weight, that makes the family very nervous, and sometimes the health care providers very nervous, and we wind up in a situation where we're supplementing for normal weight loss. And that's why focusing on stool is what most of us do, because the stool output isn't messed up by the IV fluids that mom got during labor. So watching weight gain in the first couple of days can be very deceptive and can be very confidence rotting if the baby loses weight very rapidly from IV fluid removal.
I agree. I see moms, I see patients for breastfeeding about 3 half-days a week, and I would say at least 2 of the patients each week have been derailed because of early weight loss in the hospital that was probably part of the normal pattern that you describe. And unfortunately, I think it really takes a lot to sort of rebuild that confidence for families. So I would encourage everyone to sort of understand that there should be some caution when that happens in the birth hospital. And also that, as you said, normal babies sort of lose that water log over the first week of life, and then we only expect them to regain their birth weight by 2 weeks. So there's this sort of normal pattern that happens. And again, I think it's probably better to get rechecked a little bit more frequently rather than jumping to supplementing with other with formula or pumped breast milk. It's really a good idea just to get support either from their pediatrician or family medicine doctor.
And, you know, we're talking ounces also. And I know what I do to manipulate my weight when I'm trying to manipulate pounds. Just like I would pee first and I would probably exercise and be a little dehydrated before I got on the scale.
We all do that,
and right, but it's to manipulate pounds. Think about ounces now. So you have a baby who may have just peed or pooped prior to being put on the scale. That could be a 2 or 3 ounce weight loss. And, you know, if the baby had waited to pee or poop until they had been weighed, we would have had that same amount in their system. And so, you know, these weights, if they're pre and post feeding weights, they can be very helpful. But the babies who are coming in sometimes every day to get weighed, that can be incredibly deceptive based on what's been going on with the baby. So if the baby gets a nice feeding in the waiting room and has a nice full bladder when we put them on the scale, they look great. And then the following week when their stomach's empty and they've just peed, it doesn't look like they've gained as much weight. So we have to look at stool output and other indicators of well-being before we put all of our chips in the weight basket.
So. I just wanted to say, I think there's also certain families that rent scales for their own home, and I think that just sets up, again, what Dr. Thomas talked about, is that it just sets up for more anxiety because there's so much variability in that. So we really try to discourage people from doing renting baby scales at home.
It's great information, ladies. We could really go on about this for a very long time because women have so many questions, and that's why there's classes and experts such as yourself to help women navigate this new life and this new world of breastfeeding and feeding their new infant, which is such an exciting time. So, Dr. Thomas, I'd like to start with you as a wrap-up. Easing that transition, whether or not they go back to work after 6 weeks and they want on a pump, what do you tell them about that? So wrap it up with your best advice about some of these questions that you get every day as a breastfeeding specialist, and what do you want listeners to know?
The Affordable Care Act has some provisions in it for breastfeeding moms. One of them is that their insurance company has to provide them with a pump at no cost sharing, and some of those insurance companies will give the pumps out prenatally. So they should be contacting their insurance company to find out how they can easily access that pump if they know that they're going back to work. Not every woman needs a pump, but if they're going back to work, that would be important to check into. The Affordable Care Act also has a provision for reasonable break time, and so women should know their rights in terms of being able to pump on the job and being given the appropriate amount of time to do so. I typically have the moms in my practice start pumping about maybe 3 to 4 weeks before they go back to work, and I have them pump for what feels like about 10 or 15 minutes after daytime feedings. People can do it in any way that they want to, but I usually discourage pumping in the first couple of weeks because the pump is not the baby. The pump is not ever going to be the baby. And pumping is not fun. Nobody has fun pumping. So the longer that we can put it off, the better. The pump is not designed to remove colostrum. And we are focusing more and more on using our hands at the beginning of breastfeeding to help with pumping. But going back to work, everybody experiences a drop in their milk supply. The pumps are very good and will help remove milk, but a lot of pumping is your attitude. So if you don't like it, your body will know that you don't like it, and you don't get to pump very much. The hormone that's responsible for milk release, which is oxytocin, incredibly sensitive to adrenaline. And if you're sitting in a spot in your office thinking, I hate this, I need to get back to work, I'm too busy, what's happening? Your body's going, that's it, we're not pumping anything today. So one of the biggest caveats I have is, like, don't look at the pump and think happy thoughts the entire time that you're pumping. And really, best of all, when you do get home, snuggle with the baby, feed as much as you can at the breast on weekends and at night when you're home with the child, because pumping is not going to be the greatest way to sustain your milk supply after you go back to work. We're still around. We're still available. That same crew of people who are available to help you with the latch and to get used to the whole idea of motherhood, we're still around to help you get back to work. And obviously, most of us are still at work and have experienced it and can share some of our stories with you as well.
And Dr. Bunick, last word to you. And what do you want women to know about sharing this experience with their spouse, how they can get their spouse involved in breastfeeding, because sometimes the partner can feel a little left out at this incredible bonding time, and what you want them to know about really creating this lovely time in their lives and getting the help that they need should they need it?
Sure. I think there's it's really important to involve your partner or the baby's father. I think that fathers can really be sort of a supporting cast member and really be part of great support emotionally around it. I think fathers certainly can do skin to skin with their babies. Sometimes after a mom has nursed, the baby will settle a little bit better on the baby's chest because of the confusion of the baby doesn't know, should I eat, should I sleep? But they can really enjoy that time with the baby. I think this is a much better recommendation than changing diapers. I think it's not such a bonding experience to change diapers, so I wouldn't encourage that. I think in general, it's a really stressful time, and I think sometimes fathers can sometimes encourage moms to get help. So if someone is offering to do some of the chores, and I think that everyone should try to get sleep, because even dads get sleep deprived, and this is something that couples have, the transition into parenthood is hard for both people, so just making sure everyone gets rested. And again, I mentioned earlier, dad or the partner can leave the mom in her quiet house and take the baby out for a walk or out for a cup of coffee so that mom can sleep in the quiet house. I think it's really important for mothers not to sort of criticize the help. So if a dad is trying to help, just really being positive about that and complimenting them on that as well. But I think it can be one of the most amazing adventures of a lifetime, and breastfeeding provides the baby a great start. So if everyone can be on the same page about how that's important, I think it's really a great thing.
Thank you so much, ladies, for being with us today and for explaining all of this so beautifully and really sharing with us your expertise in women and breastfeeding and that exciting time in a woman's life when she's just had a baby. It is, I am a mother of two, and while my oldest is now 18, I do remember those first few weeks as being overwhelming and yet amazing all at the same time. So thank you again for joining us. You're listening to Healthy Children. And of course, all our experts here are provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the gold standard in pediatricians. Thank you so much for listening. This is Melanie Cole for Radio MD. Stay well.